Dublin's Talking Sport.
Welcome to Dublin's Talking Sports podcast with me, Ken Doherty, and my good friend, Reggie Corrigan. Thanks for tuning in to catch up on the latest GAA, football, rugby, and all the crack. Enjoy the show, and don't forget, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts.
It's plenty happening this weekend. The big one is the game tonight, Azerbaijan. A lot of pressure on, obviously. I feel so sorry for Stephen Kenny. He's put in so much hard work, and I've seen such amazing progress with the team. Bitter disappointment against Portugal. Just been so unlucky. And I expect them to get a win tonight, but it'll be nonetheless. He'd be happy to get it under his belt and get the job done.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be that easy, though. You know, I totally agree with you, though. You can see the green shoots of recovery for the Irish team and the football that they played, particularly against football. They were desperately unlucky not to get a result there. You know, but for Ronaldo's two great headers, they could have got 3 points there and it would have set them up nicely in the group. But they're too far behind now. They're sort of going to be playing for pride. And I think definitely deserve a good victory now tonight. So I hope we'll see a really good performance with some of the young players that he's introduced. Some great performances actually against Portugal, I must say. The keeper was magnificent. There's a lot of young players there that are coming through, and they will get stronger and stronger as we progress and as the months and this year passes. But I think a good win tonight will give them a much-needed boost, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fans are feeling similar. There seems to be good support coming through from now as well. Actually, Jane was out during the week catching up with a few of the fans, trying to get an idea of their thoughts. Let's have a listen to what they had to say.
Okay. Based on last results, lucky to get a win. I think Stephen Kenny is doing a good job. I just don't think the players he has can implement the plan he has.
Look, I've been a season ticket holder for years. This is the first time I've ever been excited about the style of play that Ireland are actually playing. We've seen the same thing over and over with Trapattoni and O'Neill. And to be fair, maybe we are just playing to our limitations, but it is kind of exciting to see us play that, you know, passing possession style of football under Kenny.
A more settled team. I think it should be probably 2-0 to Ireland. The last day against Azerbaijan, we weren't great, but I think we'll be more settled this time around and we'll beat them.
I'm not very hopeful.
I think Stephen Kenny's doing a relatively good job. I agree with the more expansive type of football. Part of the issue is that if you're not funding grassroots football and not funding the sport in the wider context, then you're going to have difficulty at the national level.
Let's give him a chance. This, the Qatar World Cup, nobody wanted to go to Qatar for the World Cup anyways. Let's give him the 2024 Euros and let's see what happens.
Yeah, well, a lot of optimism there, Ken, you have to say, and a lot of people seem to be Stephen Kenny fans. There doesn't seem to be any sort of calling for his head anyway, which is a great thing.
No, not at all. I think, you know, when we look back at the great Irish teams, Reg, you know, how lucky we were with Bless, you know, during the Charlton era particularly, you know, with the amount of top quality footballers that we had who were playing at the top level in England. We don't seem to have as many now, you know, so we have to understand that. And I think the Irish supporters do understand that. They can see the football that he's playing, the style that he's playing. It's not hit and rush. It's not, you know, they're trying to play a possession type football. It looks attractive on the eye, and we just need a little bit more quality, a little bit more experience, and but I think he's doing a really, really good job, and I think the football supporters of Ireland understand that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go to the game on Tuesday night, bring the lads to that one. Not going tonight, but we'll go on Tuesday night. So it's great having football. It's great having games that we can go to and stuff that the kids can enjoy.
Yeah.
So hopefully tonight they'll get the result. I'm feeling confident about it. I think they will,
but
time will tell. In other football news, I suppose the big news this week was Newcastle.
Newcastle. What a takeover. I mean, what a difference that will make to Newcastle and the supporters. I mean, this could be potentially another Manchester City, you know, and over the next few years, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, they have as much money as, if not a lot more than Sheikh Mansour. They're going to put a lot of money into it. They're going to bring all new players and possibly a new manager, which I feel sorry for Steve Bruce, because I think he is a good manager, given you know, the quality of players that he could possibly possess. I think he deserves a chance. But yeah, this could really shake up the Premiership, and I think it's what Newcastle supporters deserve. They're a fantastic club, wonderful tradition, great supporters, you know, through the bad times as well as the good. And I think they deserve something like this. So, but it's going to have an amazing effect on the Premiership. I mean, it's going to be incredible.
Yeah, I do wonder about it, though. I mean, obviously, there's a bit of a backlash about, you know, the politics in the countries, the country involved with the takeover and all of that, the way the human rights, and there's all of those elements of it which are one side of the thing. But then the other side of it is, you know, is this another, I don't know, is it like a nail in the coffin for the Premier League or English clubs in the sense that, you know, are they all going to head this way? Are they all just going to become toys for huge money men to play with, and it's who has the biggest war chest?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a possibility, you know, but isn't it great that in another way, you know, whether they're spending the money, you know, in the Premiership in England, they're going to bring good players in, going to bring new investment into the city of Newcastle. Yeah. And like what Manchester done, what the Manchester City owners have done to the city of Manchester there, to the Etihad and the surrounding areas, is just incredible. I mean, I see it every time I go up there, you know, with it's sort of a whole sports city. They've spent money on the whole, that type of area where it was dilapidated and run down. They put like new arenas in, new sports city. It's just magnificent. So hopefully the owners in Newcastle will not only invest in the club, but the surrounding areas and in their academy and everything. And it can only be good for the city of Newcastle.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Investment in the area, and it's an area that needs it. The two armies certainly are. No, there's no better supporters in the world than them, so they needed something to cheer about. So you're right. It'll bring an injection. It's just going to be interesting to watch this space over the next period of time to see what other clubs might follow down that road, what way things will go, whether or not you know money will just you know dictate everything, and you get the likes of City and now Newcastle buying and hoovering up all of the best players. And there's no competition in the league anymore, but it doesn't seem to have gone that way in the last while. So hopefully that won't be the case.
You know? I think a lot of Manchester United fans would wish that you know, about 10 or 15 years ago, that some family for Saudi Arabia would have taken over Manchester United rather than the Glazers, who have sort of continued to take a lot of money out of the club rather than put an awful lot of money in. Although they have spent money, you know, I'll give them that, but they've taken a lot of money out of the club as well, you know.
Yeah, I suppose that's what investment is. What about the boxing? Will you be giving that a...
Looking forward to the Gypsy King against Wilder. Act 3, but it's going to be fascinating and very, very exciting. Although it's Las Vegas time, so it's going to be on at like pretty early in the morning, 4 or 5 o'clock. But both Christian and I are very excited about looking at it and hoping that Tyson Fury gets another win and then he can, you know, maybe fight Usyk or Joshua down the road, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's going to be an interesting one, all right. He's so, like, such an enigma, Tyson Fury. You look at him and you kind of work, you're saying to yourself, how can, you look at Anthony Joshua and he's chiseled and, you know, he's just such a dedicated athlete, and you look at Fury and you're kind of going, your man doesn't even look fit, you know, he's carrying weight.
No, I know, but he's
just so tough, he's just so hard. Like, I mean, he's we used to say in rugby, you know, you'd have gym bunnies and lads who are manufactured, and then you'd have farmer strength, the real natural strength that just comes from the likes of Tadhg Furlong, you know, Wexford man throwing bales of hay over the shoulder. That type of strength is so much more important than the manufactured stuff that you get in a gym. And I think Fury is another example of that.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And also, he's got great boxing skills. You know, he's very, very fast hands. He's very awkward type of fighter, but he's very he's a real sort of classical, sort of old style type of fighter. You know, and he delivers a big knockout punch. You know, and that's exactly what he had. Something that Joshua doesn't really have. You know, and I'm sure that you know, he'll put on a really show of excellence tonight, Tyson Fury. He's a great character as well. You know, without a doubt, he's an amazing character. He's talked about his mental health problems. he's quite open about that. You know, he was 10 stone overweight at one stage. Yeah. You know, he lost 10 stone for a fight. Came back from that. Of course, he came back from the knockout in the very first fight, you know, where he was knocked to the ground, got up on the count of eight, came back and ended up, you know, getting a draw and then beating him in the second fight. So he's had an incredible, incredible story. And he's a great character, a great addition to the boxing world, I must say.
Absolutely. The other one then is the Nations Cup, of course, Spain versus France.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be quite good, yeah. That was some semi-final, wasn't it? Did you see it during the week?
The 3-2 to France.
Yeah, 3-2 to France. 2-0 down after the first half.
Yeah.
And they scored three goals. They got a penalty. Got a bit lucky with the penalty, I think, the Mbappe penalty to level things up. But the winner from Hernandez in the end, the 90th minute, was just... absolutely fantastic. You know, a great win for France. You know, when you watch Pogba play for France, you think, is he the same player that plays for United at times? But it's quite frustrating. But it should be a great final. Spain against France on Sunday night and Belgium against Italy in the third and fourth place playoff. So,
yeah. We look forward to
that. That's your sport the weekend. No snooker this weekend, Reg. We're on a little sabbatical.
Just as well. Get some practice in. After Wednesday night, you need the rest.
Here's the football with the one and only Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call Podcast.
I suppose we have to touch on last night's victory for Dundalk. A great win over Rovers. Bit of a surprise win, I suppose, for most people. But Sean Murray getting the winner there and a huge boost to Dundalk to drag them out of that bottom of the table area.
Yeah, it was a huge win, Reggie. And probably overall, they deserved it as well. They played very well on the night. And they have built up a bit of momentum over the past 4 or 5 weeks. And to be fair to Vinnie Purdy, he's kind of turned things around a little bit. And he's... They were in a perilous position, as you say, hovering around that relegation zone and looking like maybe a relegation playoff. But they always had the quality in the squad, and they've gotten a lot of those players back from injury. Reggie and Murray included in that. And the last, I think, he scored 5 goals in the month of September. He's been absolutely brilliant, Sean Murray. And they've boosted themselves. I think it's up to 6th place now. They have a cup semi-final to look forward to as well next week. And despite all the doom and gloom, there's still plenty to play for Dundalk, and they could yet end the year with silverware. And with the quality that they have in the squad, Reggie, still, despite all the ups and downs they've had this year, it wouldn't surprise you at all if they went on and won the cup.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about that. I suppose Rovers won't be overly concerned, but I suppose a slip-up like that, they won't be happy about it, but they can live with it.
Yeah, and they have the 9-point cushion, Reggie. They're still well on top, and they still should go on and win the league. But they'll be disappointed with how they played, I suppose. And they don't like to lose any game, but particularly to Dundalk, who've been one of the rivals over the last 2 or 3 years. I know Dundalk didn't put up much of a challenge this year, but certainly they've been the rivals over the last couple of seasons. And it won't sit well with Stephen Bradley losing to Dundalk, obviously. But as you say, they do have the 9-point cushion. They've been the best team overall without hitting the heights, really, Reggie. I think they've only been okay, to be honest with you, over the course of the season. They've never really hit the heights of what they did last year, but they are the best team overall, and they're 9 points clear, and they will go on to win the league.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about that. Okay, let's turn to international stuff. And before I go to the senior team, we have to talk about last night's championship qualifier for the under-21s. A good win. For Jim Crawford's men, 2-0 over Luxembourg. Some very, very good football. I caught parts of it last night. Interesting stuff there. Yeah, good win.
Yeah, I was in Tala covering it, Reggie, and they played very well because they slipped up in the away fixture against Luxembourg a few weeks ago. They only drew 1-1 and they conceded a late penalty. And they would have been disappointed with that because Luxembourg now have played 5 games and they've lost 4. And they've only drawn 1, and that was against us. So they should have been beating them away, and they should obviously have won last night. And they did get the victory, which is good. So it was a good win, a comprehensive victory. They never really had any scares, or they never really looked like that they were in danger. But Luxembourg had a bit of a chance, a good chance actually, from a free kick in the first half. And they had a breakaway in the second half. That was about it, Reggie. But Brian Maher played very well in goals without really having a lot to do, but he pulled off a good save near the end. His distribution was very good. But Conor Coventry and Gavin Kilkenny, the two centre midfielders, were very, very good on the night. Young Liam Kerrigan as well, who's with UCD, making his first start for the under-21s, had a brilliant second half. So overall, Jim will be delighted. And obviously the focus on the game on Tuesday now away to Montenegro.
Yeah, that's a tough one for them, though, the Montenegro one, because you see, for our listeners, Montenegro is still on that red list from the UK travel ban, which means anyone that he puts together in that squad that goes over there will have to isolate when they come back. And, of course, a lot of these players in that 21 squad all playing their trade in the UK.
Well, he's named a provisional squad as well for that game, Reggie, so it's made up of home-based players. It looks like they're all going to be involved, which is great for them and great for the young lads in the league, the likes of Johnny Kenny, Niall Moorhead, Brandon Kavanagh, Bray, Cameron Ledwidge, Alex Murphy from Galway. So it's all home-based players that are going to play because, as you said, because of the restrictions and the guidelines at the moment, none of those players that are based in England, well, they can travel, but the fact that if they travel, they'll have to quarantine for 14 days, so none of the clubs will allow that, I don't think. So Jim was left in a tricky situation, really, because of the times that we're living in, and the best solution was to come up with the home-based squad. And I think it's a good solution as well, Reggie. It gives those players an opportunity and a chance. And the fact that we still have to fulfil the fixture because they have aspirations on qualifying and we need to get a victory in Montenegro. So hopefully the lads can do themselves justice and pick up the victory, the home-based players.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's hope that that is the case. Okay, on to the senior team. So, of course, they've got to take on Azerbaijan away from home in Baku at 5 p.m. today. We played some clips earlier on, Alan, and there's a lot of support still amongst the fans for Stephen Kenny. There's a lot of happiness about the type of football that he's trying to play, and there's a lot of understanding about maybe the limitations that he has in terms of players that are available to him. So it's good to see that the fans seem to be still standing behind Stephen Kenny, but it won't be an easy win, but by God, we kind of need one against Azerbaijan.
He does need a win, absolutely, Reggie, and that's the reality of it. But I think you summed that up lovely there in terms of the fact that there's a lot of support for him. People appreciate what he's trying to do in terms of the way we're playing. And the last thing you said, and you're bang on, is about the limitations with what's there with the squad and what he's working with. So people have to take all those factors into consideration, I feel, when they're judging Stephen and when they're assessing where we are at the moment. And fair enough, people will look at, if you want to just purely boil it down to results, of course results aren't good enough, but for me you have to bring all those factors into play when you're judging them. So the thing that's come against them really in those games, Reggie, is not beating Luxembourg and not beating Azerbaijan, because you'd understand the results maybe against some of the bigger teams, and obviously we put in a great performance against Portugal, but nobody expected us to get a result. We did very well against Serbia and that was a really good result, drawing 1-1, but then to back that up, you have to be beating, obviously, the likes of Luxembourg and Azerbaijan, and that's where Stephen has fallen short. So going into the game tonight, that's where I think the pressure comes from, is the fact that we have fallen short in those games. But hopefully we do get the victory today, Reggie, because it will just quieten down people and dampen things down a little bit, because this crack of having a debate after every single match about Stephen and the future and all, I don't think that's good for anyone. And I would give him the Euros campaign. People are suggesting he needs a strong finish to this campaign for him to get the Euros. But I would absolutely give him the Euros right now because of all those reasons I outlined of where we are at the moment. And if we're looking to build and looking for the long-term and sustainability, he has to be given that time because of all the reasons we said of where we're at the moment. So I hope to get a victory tonight for Stephen and for the team and for the bigger picture, in the sense that we want to build for the future and we want... And I think Stephen is the right man to do that right now at this moment in time, so hopefully to get the result, Reggie.
You know, a lot of people are talking about progress that has been made. Where have you seen the biggest differences, and what is it about the way he's trying to play that really catches your eye and makes you think that, you know, he's got his game plan right?
I think it's there for all to see, Reggie. We've all seen it in the game in terms of the progression and what he's trying to do and the brand of football that we're trying to play. Now, people... And some people are trying to suggest the balance to be met as well. You can mix things up in football and it certainly doesn't have to be one-dimensional whatsoever. And I don't think Stephen is trying that. Where we've probably fallen short a little bit in what Stephen is trying to do is the creativity side of things, in terms of maybe just creating some more chances and being more clinical and taking them. But if you look at, obviously, the patterns of play and what he's trying to do from the goalkeeper out from the back and play out from the back and through the thirds, that's there for everybody to see. That, of course, is going to take time to get better and better and better at it as well. but you do have to back it up with the odd result here and there, and that's where he's fallen short. But certainly you look at the amount of players that he's brought into the squad, young players, giving them their opportunity as well. You could argue, would they have been given that opportunity had a different manager been there? I don't think they would. So all those are positives. And the fact that those young boys are so young and only starting off in their career, that's all the more reason to get behind them and give them a chance and an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about that. I suppose it didn't help during the week with all the controversy around Callum Robinson and the vaccination thing. Bit of a distraction they didn't need.
Absolutely. And that's another thing that obviously creates more noise, is the fact that, Reggie, through all the camps that we've met up, there has been these kind of sideshows carrying on. And that certainly doesn't help. And we thought we were over them after the last campaign, after all the COVID issues we had before. But then, obviously, Callum Robinson comes out and that press conference, and that garners huge headlines, not only in Ireland, all over the world, really, because of the times that we're living in. And to be fair to Callum Robinson, yes, he should be vaccinated. But at the same time, in what he said, Reggie, it is his choice, and that's where he is at the moment. I don't think Stephen has any control over that. And he certainly can't implement the rule to say everybody needs to be vaccinated or you can't play. That would be only shooting himself in the foot. And the fact that he's not our club manager, he hasn't the power to do that either.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's a really, really difficult one. And even what you said there, yes, he should be vaccinated, but he's had COVID twice. So surely surely he has the vaccine in his own body from what his immune system is. But that's another debate entirely. But the freedom of choice for these players, and, you know, it's such a difficult thing. It really, really is. I even saw a thing during the week there about, I think it was one of the NBA players in the States being forced to get the vaccine. So basically he just came out and he said, it's not my body anymore, I don't own my body, the club people do. It's an amazing statement for a sports person to make, you know, that they were forced into getting that vaccine. But they're the times that we live in, and everybody will have their own opinion on it, there's no question about it.
I don't think that's right either, Reggie. You can't force anyone to do anything, you know. And as I say, I'm vaccinated, I'm sure you are, the majority in this country are, and I would be very much along the lines of listening to the doctors and the medics, and that's fine. But everybody has their own opinion and view, and then the problem then with that, Reggie, is the times we live in with social media and the misinformation that's out there is a major problem, a major issue as well. But how do you control that? I don't know. But certainly from Robinson's point of view, I felt he was honest and upfront, and he gave his reason. Well, he didn't give a great reason, but he gave a reason as to say it was his personal choice, and that was it. So sometimes you just have to go along with that, you know.
Yeah, well, I'd be with you. I am vaccinated, but I would respect people's decision not to get that if they want. I don't believe it should be forced on anybody. But anyway, that's a different conversation. Let's talk about Newcastle and the huge story that there is around the takeover of that club. Ken and I were discussing it earlier on. He feels it's magnificent for the area, brilliant for the people of Newcastle, the Toon Army. They need that injection. He's seen what it's done in Man City. But there are other repercussions to all of this as well, namely that, you know, football in the UK is going in a direction that, you know, where will it be in 10 years' time? Will there be any fan-owned clubs at all, or will it all just be billionaires that own the football clubs?
It's going down a horrible road, Reggie, and I can't stand it whatsoever. Having countries owning football clubs and just coming in with kind of bottomless pits of money and just deciding what they want to do and whenever they want to do it, and just, as I say, having that impact. It is great. Like, obviously, Newcastle have gone through the total doldrums over the last number of years, and they're really fanatical, passionate fans, and of course you want to see things work out well for them in terms of the football side of things. But I would much rather see it done organically than this nature, Reggie. And as you have clubs and stuff like that, where will it be in years to come? The regime that's obviously taken over Newcastle doesn't sit well with me in terms of what they stand for and believe in as well.
Yeah.
And I'd have no time for it. I'd have absolutely no time for it whatsoever, Reggie.
Yeah, I'd be a similar mindset, I have to be honest with you, Alan. In fact, I'd love, and I know it'll never happen, but I would love to see an NFL-style franchise system being brought in from the FA into the Premiership, whereby there's a proper draft system, there's fairness throughout the thing, and there's some sense of equality about the types of players that are playing across the thing, and make everybody have a fair shot at it, rather than just money talking about everything. Because it just, you know, I feel it's just destroying the game at this stage.
It is, and it's well down the road of destroying a Reggie, despite this Newcastle team coming in. And people have fallen out of love with the game because of these reasons. And I don't want to sound like an old fogey, and certainly not that, but when we were maybe growing up and you didn't have that kind of thing in football, and it was just you supported your team, and whatever was happening with the team, you supported it through thick and thin, and there was none of these kind of, as I say, it's not even billionaires coming in, it's countries now taking over football clubs, which doesn't sit well. And whatever about them, if they wanted to take it over for, say, football and reasons, which is obviously not the case, but for what they stand for in terms of human rights and all other stuff that's going on in that country, how can any governing body stand over allowing them to take over a football club in any league whatsoever, all over the world? It's just, and sadly, it's happening far too often, Reggie, and as you say, when is it going to stop, or when is there going to be, I don't know, stuff put in place that doesn't allow this to happen? So I know Gary Neville and some of the high-profile pundits have been calling out for that, and certainly protection for the league clubs and different things like that, and for the clubs in general in Premier League. But they're going down, it's a sorry state of affairs, and they're going down a horrible, horrible road at the moment, the Premier League in England.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's gone completely around money. You know, it's terrible. And the problem is that filters down to the fans, and people need to remember that. I was lucky enough to be away last weekend, and I went into the Atletico Madrid shop to buy three jerseys for my young lads, and I walked back out again. The three jerseys were €160 each. I would have been spending £500 on three jerseys. And I just said, no, I'm not doing it.
That's not the beautiful game, Reggie, that we know. That's just exploiting people.
Completely.
That is horrendous. For kids' jerseys as well, that is an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know, like, don't get, like, what will happen here in Newcastle now, and the manager will be the first one who'll go. They'll get rid of Steve Bruce and bring in their own fella, high-profile one that they'll want. Then they'll spend a fortune on players. The fans will think it's great if Newcastle start winning, but it's just a vicious circle, and I'm not sure
The ticket prices will go up, everything will go up, it'll all end up being corporate, and in time they won't even be able to get tickets. That's what will happen to the Joint Army.
And the one thing I always loved about Newcastle was their fans.
Yeah,
and
that's what made them.
They're so passionate. Same when you look at Sunderland, all that northeast area, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, people would have watched that documentary with Sunderland, and I know from living over there how passionate and fanatical people are, Reggie. They're just normal working class people. They work Monday to Friday to pay for their ticket on a Saturday, and that's how they live their life, and that's all they want. And for that regime now to come in and as you say, what will happen and what will change there, it takes all that, it takes the soul out of the football club for me.
Time for some GAA now on Dublin's Talking Sport.
Plenty going on in the Dublin Senior Football Championship as well, with the final group games.
Yes, indeed. They actually started last night in Group 3, Reg. We know now our first two quarter-finalists will be Ballymun Kickhams and Thomas Davis. Ballymun, the defending champions, of course, edged out Clontarf 14 points to 1-9 last night to make it two wins from three. And after the other game was a draw with Skerry's Harps. I think, well, that was from one point of view. Their two victories were by a couple of points, and then, as I said, had that draw against Skerry's. So there's obvious improvements to come from them, but mission accomplished in terms of getting out of the group initially. As did Thomas Davis, they had 12 points to spare the Kiltipper Roadmen over Skerry's. That one was in Parnell Park last night, 2-16 to 1-7 to secure their place in the last eight as well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so who have we got this weekend today?
Yeah, the other three groups will be decided over the course of the weekend. Specifically, Group 1 is an interesting one. You've got Raheny at the top of it, just ahead of Ballyboden, St. Enda's, and scoring difference. Now, there's a little subplot to this, Reg, because these two played a few weeks back, and Ballyboden won comfortably. But it emerged afterwards that they had breached the rule in terms of substitutions. So a replay was fixed for, I think it was Wednesday night at Parnell Park, and they actually drew the game. So Bowden, having had 2 points originally, found themselves with just one. So it makes the group particularly interesting. Right, Bowden play Whitehall, Columbkill at O'Toole Park at 2 o'clock tomorrow, and the Fianna play Raheny and Parnell Park at the same time. So a draw would be enough to get Bowden through, while the Fianna need to beat Raheny in that one. So it'll be in all eyes on both those venues at those at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Absolutely, yeah. That's an interesting one with the substitution thing. I had heard about that. All right. I didn't think a replay would be on the cards for that. I thought it would have been overturned with decision, but anyway.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting one, all right, and it was a very good game of football between the two of them, apparently, on Wednesday night, and the president of the GAA was present amongst the attendants in Parnell Park as well. Then you move across to Group 2, Kilmacud Crokes, well, they're really motoring. They've 2 from 2 so far. They play Ballinteer St. John's in O'Toole Park today at 5 o'clock, and the other game is out in the Knoll between St. Vincent's and Castleknock. Vincent's would be the favourites to come through that one. Castleknock are at bottom of the group. And finally then you have Group 4. It's particularly tight, this one. You have Lucan Sarsfields and St. Jude's level on 3 points, with Round Towers Lusk just a point behind them. So take your pick who's going to come out of that particular group. Both those games are tomorrow. Round Towers take on St. Jude's at 4 o'clock in Parnell Park, and then Lucan tackle Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua across the city here, not too far from me, in O'Toole Park, also at 4 o'clock. So plenty of intriguing games in the football championship, and as it approaches the business end of the championship, Reg.
No doubt about it. Let's look forward to that. Okay, on to hurling then. The Senior Hurling A Championship quarterfinals. You have the details of those.
Yes, indeed. Very attractive doubleheaders next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at county headquarters. It starts on Saturday at 3 o'clock. Nafina, a lot of people's favourites, perhaps, for this year, taking on their Cross Liffey rivals, St. Jude's. That's at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. And that's followed by the clash. Again, it's a cross river clash between Lucan Sarsfields and Craig Kieran. That one's throwing in at 5. Then on to Sunday at the same venue, Kilmacud Crokes, one of the clubs, of course, like Nafina and Ballyboden, who can do a county double potentially this year, taking on Oliver Plunkett's Own Rua at 2 o'clock. And then the big one is at 4 o'clock, Ballyboden St. Enda's versus Coola. Can't wait for this one. 4 o'clock start for that. This is a clash that's worthy of being the final, but the way it's worked out in the groups, they've been drawn against each other in the quarterfinals. So one of them has to go by about 5:15 next Sunday afternoon, Reg, and that's going to be some occasion to savour at county headquarters.
Absolutely, yeah, that would be an absolutely brilliant game. Okay, what's the state of play with the ladies' club team of football championship?
Yeah, they're motoring their race for the championship as well. There are still some issues to be resolved in that in terms of qualification, but without much shadow of a doubt, defending champions Foxrock Cabinteely, going for 7 in a row in the county, Reg, of course, are still on fire. They had a big win over Thomas Davis during the week. On the other side of it, Ballyboden St. Enda's are motoring as well. So there's a couple of games to be played over the course of the next week or so to decide the semi-finalists in that. But no more than the men's competition and the hurling, it's going to be fascinating to see how that pans out.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll look forward to that one. Okay, it's that time of year again, and the All-Star nominations have been out in hurling and football. Probably not surprisingly, Tyrone seemed to have had a raft of nominations. But what about from a Dublin perspective? How are we looking in the hurling and the football?
Well, in terms of the hurling, Reg, we got one. Danny Sutcliffe is our sole representative amongst the 45 nominees. The St. Jude's clubman, skipper of Dublin, of course, led them to 2 championship victories in 2021 over Antrim and Galway. Back-to-back wins, indeed, and all the way to an All-Ireland quarter-final against Cork, of course, who went all the way to the final only to lose to Limerick. And you're just wondering, even now, you know, had the COVID situation not struck pre-Leinster final against Kilkenny, what may have happened. But look, that's ifs, ands, buts and maybes. But congratulations anyway to Danny. Tremendous leader for Dublin, fantastic hurler, deserves his nomination, and congratulations to him on that one. In terms of the footballers, yeah, obviously, you know, we're down on our nominations this year. We're down to 5. Michael Fitzsimons of Coola. You have the Raheny duo of Brian Howard and Brian Fenton, Kieran Kilkenny from Castleknock, and Cormac Costello gets a nomination too for his consistency this year. It was great to see Cormac actually finally nail down a place in the starting 15 for Dublin this year after so many years trying. And his fine year in the blue shirt has been rewarded with an All-Star nomination. So 5 nominations, but it'll be interesting to see how many nominations are actually turned into awards when the actual night comes. But congratulations to all the nominees. Anyway, it's a great achievement.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it'll be interesting to see which way it goes. Although I do have a feeling that Tyrone, as I said, will probably win the lion's share after their performance this year.
Deservedly so. I mean, the All-Ireland champions should, in all cases, get the majority of the awards because they're the best team. So just a question of how many we can maximise ourselves.
Absolutely, no question. Okay, I see Jack O'Connor is back in the hot seat for Kerry. There was a lot of talk about what way all of this would pan out. You know, I saw an article there where he was talking about how he's mellowed out a little bit in his... 60 years, Jack O'Connor. So what are your thoughts on that appointment, and is it going to be a big threat to the likes of Dublin?
Well, they say you should never go back in sport. He's done it before, with success, it must be said. So Kerry obviously feel that he is the man to galvanise the squad of players that's there. Look, I mean, there's no doubt, we all know the talent that's within the county from their minor success over the last number of years and that, you know, but they really need to start kicking on now at senior inter-county level. And the county board and Kerry obviously feel that Jack is the man. He's had success there before. He'll command the respect. He's a tough taskmaster. There's no doubt about that. He certainly wouldn't want to be going into training in Killarney or Tralee under Jack O'Connor, you know. But that's what Kerry need, I think, you know. Peter Keane was a little bit unfortunate in some respects with the job, particularly in the first, not I say the first year, but was it last year now, 2020, the COVID year when he was pipped by Cork dramatically, you know. But it all went horribly wrong for them this year. So as I say, look, Kerry think that Jack is the man. If they think that, well and good, let them at it, you know. It'll be interesting to see. I don't think he's too fondly remembered in Kildare for the way that he left them, but one has to look after himself, and he's a retired man now from the teaching profession, and based back at home, he can concentrate exclusively on the job.
Knee-jerk by Kerry, or did they really have to make those changes given the talent of the squad that they had, that they had to change the manager?
They probably felt they did, you know. They've been knocking at the door now for a couple of years, and they're very well aware, obviously, of the talent pool that they have. Now, you and I have had this conversation before about teams developing delivering on their potential. You know, and the Limerick Hurlers, in fairness, have done that twice in the last 3 years, and probably won't be too far away from it again next year. But it's about time that Kerry stepped up to the plate here, you know, and they'll have been aggrieved with some of their defeats to Dublin. But what would probably irk them a little bit more is to see Tyrone kicking on and winning an All-Ireland this year. So that's tremendous motivation for them. And, you know, it's a famine if you go sort of more than 2 or 3 years in Kerry without winning an All-Ireland. So there's big pressure on Jack there, but he's certainly capable of moulding that squad into a winning one.
Okay, now it's time to talk to Niall Breslin, or Brezzy as he's better known, about his recent Lust for Life ultramarathon that he did from Greystones to Mullingar. And not only that, at the end of it, he played 2 gigs with the Blizzards. What a man. The one and only Niall Breslin, a.k.a. Brezzy. Morning, Brezzy. How are you?
Brezzy, how are you getting on, man?
Getting on great, thanks. Yeah, miserable looking day outside. I keep saying it to everybody, but we'll keep the best out. Looking forward to plenty of sport this weekend. I have to start by chatting to you about that ultramarathon. I know I've spoken to you about it in person, I don't know how in the name of God you even attempted it, but it was a hell of a route. Greystones to Mullingar. What was it in total kilometres?
The guys did 200 in total, and I did 140. So they kind of had another day to go, and then obviously I had to stop for the gigs. I could be the guy giving out about not gigging for 2 years and then not do the gigs when they come along. So I had to do the gigs in the middle of it all, and I rang my manager going, I don't know how to put this to you, Brendan, but I have an ultramarathon to do that day. And he goes, will you be able for the gig? I was like, I don't know. I've never done an ultramarathon before, a gig before, so I don't know. Yeah, it was tough as a challenge, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, it was tough.
I saw some of the tweets that you're putting out, and in particular, that was the one weekend that the heat just went through the roof, and the humidity, I remember it well, was off the charts. It was so hot. But I mean, you know, you're talking 70, 80 kilometres a day, and you had never done it before. And I know from talking to you, you hadn't really trained for it, had you?
No, I've done an Ironman kind of thing, which is a totally different kettle of fish, because there's 3 disciplines and the body has chances to recover kind of in each discipline, from the swim to the bike. You're kind of using different muscles, but on a run, especially somebody who's, you know, 16 and a half stone, 6'6", I'm not built for endurance long running. Yeah. So it's never been my strong point, but like training for something like that, the best way to train for something like that is to just get your aerobic fitness really high, but really work on your mind, really, because you're going to hit walls 2 or 3 or 4 times. And the most difficult part of the whole thing that nobody can train you for was the monotony of the canal and the straightness of the canal. Like, you could see 10, 15 kilometers ahead of yourself at some stage. And it was genuinely like those videos from deserts, you know, the mirage. in the, I remember at one stage I said to the guy who was running, I said, I think there's a coffee shop at the end of this. And he was like, ah, Bretty, why would there be a coffee shop in the canal? I was like, well, I can see one. He goes, ah, Bretty, you need to eat something or something. But there was a coffee shop there. And it was like those westerns when we see water in the desert. We fell at the thing, and there was a lady there with this little trailer. And I had three double-decker bars in and out at the same time. But it was incredibly testing of the mind more than anything.
Yeah, and you speak a lot, obviously, about mental health and the mind and keeping everything in track. And I know, you know, from our playing days back in the day in rugby, you were a very talented rugby player with everything going for you, but plagued with injury, and it ultimately brought your career to an end prematurely. But, you know, sport has always been something that you've tried to keep going, even though the body maybe broke down on you. You always kept some form of sport going, and as much for your head as anything else, I think.
Yeah, I think with rugby, you know, the thing with rugby was, at the time, it wasn't near as, I suppose, sports science led now as it is now. Like, my injury plagues came from the fact that I was never given time off. I came from an under-21s World Cup where I played. I was one of the only players that played every minute of the game, like, which was 5 intense games of rugby in 3 weeks, which anybody's not going to be able for. And I came home, and I remember I landed on Monday and I was playing for Leinster on Wednesday. And in that game, I felt something go. And I never felt something like it. And it was essentially a double hernia. It was both sides of my stomach. It was just fatigue and tiredness. Body broke down. And that was a domino effect the entire time when I was at Leinster, to rupturing my quad and tearing hamstrings, because it's like a river. Once you put something out a place, you know yourself, Reggie, it kind of starts to affect everything.
Yeah.
And then mentally, I wasn't in a great space anyway, and then it just starts to spiral. And I couldn't sleep, I couldn't function, I wasn't eating. And I just said, this isn't worth it anymore. It just isn't worth it. And I retired, and it's devastating, because my biggest regret with rugby was I never got to show anyone what I was capable of. I always felt like a taxi man with no car, and it was just a difficult place to be. But sport is in me, every element of my cell, every cell of my body since I was a child. I'm a Gaelic footballer by trade, really.
Yeah.
And I realised I could come to Dublin and be a posh Dublin school kid, so I started to play rugby. it was devastating. But sport to me, endurance sport, is different, because it's weirdly enough easier on the body, because if your joints are strong and your bones are strong, you can do it. My issues were always muscles. I kept tearing muscles. And if you're doing power-based sports, that's probably where you're going to tear muscles more than kind of long endurance, slow, you know, the mind and the body working together. So endurance sport became my next love, and moved into kind of triathlon. And I got a little too obsessed with that. So I was like, nope, I don't need to be getting obsessed with anything. And then I just love training. I love running. I love being outside more than anything. I think nature is probably one of the greatest gifts we have. So being able to just go out and run is just, in summer like Wicklow,
yes,
you know, you don't get anywhere better, really. So it's a privilege to still be able to do it, and I don't take it for granted.
No, you don't. And you haven't lost that level of competition. I know from playing golf with you, you're schooling me a couple of times, especially when it comes down to playing for lunch on the 18th. Suddenly, out comes your
inner part. Nothing to do with me. You called that one.
yeah, absolutely. Listen, you know, your other love and your other amazing talent, and indeed your career, is music, of course. It's been a tough period of time for that whole industry of late. But, you know, you mentioned the fact that you got a couple of gigs at the end of that run. How good is it to be back playing?
It's irreplaceable. Like, I mean, Reggie, you know what it's like. I mean, even with sport, that's one of the difficult things with retirement, is you're leaving behind something you'll never replace, you know, and going out in front of, you know, thousands of people in you know, Lansdowne Road or wherever. It's an irreplaceable feeling for you. And it's the same with gigs. It's the same feeling. It's something you'll never replace. And so when they're taken away from you, it's devastating. And, you know, you kind of, we needed to do it. We knew as an industry, we didn't want to get back until it was safe. We really didn't. But we felt that the government weren't giving us the same considerations at the same time. And they didn't understand the industry, which was where our frustrations were coming from. We're a safe industry. We're incredibly regulated. We know what we're doing. And my annoyance was the government were probably watching Spinal Tap too much, thinking that it's, you know, it's this madness. It's not. And it's not. And the people working in it are some of the most true professionals I've ever worked with. So, yeah, it was tough not getting back to play. But I swear to God, when I got on stage, there was one stage in the gig we played in Mears Court in Mullingar, and Deck, our drummer, knew exactly what he was doing. But there's a moment in our shows where he goes, everybody down on the ground, including the crowd. And I looked at him and said, Deck, if I get down on that ground, I'm not getting back up. And he knew it. So I kept standing, and the crowd sat down, but he kept going, get down to me. Yeah. And he knew. It was like James Brown. The crew had to come and pick me up, and I was like a plank of wood. And he was on the floor laughing, but I didn't care. It was just that madness that I missed from gigging.
Yeah, absolutely. The adrenaline gets you through a lot of it, but after 140 kilometres, I can imagine there wasn't a whole lot of adrenaline left. So, yeah, dragging it to your feet. But you got through it, and it's a huge testament to you and the rest of the lads that, you know, you got the gig and you got it going so well. Tell me, the other huge part of your life is the Lust for Life. Your charity, and you know, it does amazing work. You've another event coming up for that, I think, as well. It'll be a charity fundraiser.
Well, I did that run for Lust for Life. I co-founded Lust for Life when I started to talk about my own journey with my mental health, and I realised that we have a country that's not addressing it the way it needs to be, especially within education. And I've never been a problem admiration society. I just don't do it. I don't point at problems. I try to see what I can bring to it. And from day one, when I started Lust for Life, as initially just as a blog and, you know, then a website and now an organization, I wanted to get into schools. That was it. And we're now in 360 primary schools in Ireland. We'll be in every primary school in Ireland by 2023. And then we go secondary school systems. And these are research-based programs that we do at UCD School of Psychology. And basically, they need to get into the curriculum. That is what we're aiming to do. We're an advocacy charity, and in mental health, advocacy is misunderstood. You know, most mental health charities are service providers that provide counselling or therapy, which is really important. But advocacy is just as important, because we have political systems that haven't progressed. We have health systems that haven't addressed this in the way it needs to be addressed. So somebody needs to be fighting that corner, and that's what we're trying to do with A Lust for Life, and that's what my passion is about, because I wasn't failed by a system. The NHS system when I was living in London caught me. And I just would wish we had the same system here that's available to anybody and everybody that needs it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, you're doing great work on that and keeping it, keeping the awareness out there. And certainly in primary school, it's great to see that they've gotten into so many, and with so many more to come. Just finally, you know, you still keep a huge interest in sport. You keep an eye on Leinster all the time. And, you know, is it GAA you're more interested in these days, or what floats your boat?
You know what? I'm into athletics, and I'm into individual sports. I'm into the sacrifices they make, you know, and the detail that they have to go to do what they do. I just find that really, like, even the Olympics, I found, I don't know why, I think these people are just incredible. And I've started to just very much get, I've never been into athletics personally. I think of the sacrifice these guys and girls are making and what they do. It's pretty incredible. But from a rugby point of view, I mean, I'm a rugby fan. I always have been. I adore it. And, you know, I kind of look at Leinster in such awe and how they have set it up. And the one thing I would say about Leinster, and I think you can probably back me up here, I was just absolutely delighted that Leo Cullen ended up in that job, because people always ask me, he was one of the best players I've ever played with. And I was lucky enough to play with him a few times. And it's Leo, because it's proper leadership that I found with him. And the fact he's doing so well with Leinster is not a surprise to me, you know. And it's good to see someone like that who has it in his bones. Yeah, kind of running the show there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question, Leo's he has always been a leader, a great work ethic, and I think that's really coming to the fore now with Leinster and the way things are going. Yeah, so he's a good example of it.
And he's one of the dirtiest players I've ever played with as well, by the way, just to say. The thing about Leo Cullen is you never saw what he did in the pitch. I used to look at him and go, my God, you're so mean. You were a bit cleaner than him.
Just a little bit. No, but I'm well aware of all the bits and pieces that he did. But I never minded having him behind me in a scrum either, because there was plenty of support there at all times. All right, Brez, it's been great chatting to you. Really enjoyed that. Thanks for taking the time. And when is that next run you're doing? You are doing another one shortly, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I'm doing the Mullingar Marathon on the 13th of November. Yeah. And that's for the Where's My Mind podcast. So we've trained four people to do it. So can't wait. 800 people running the first marathon. It's going to be an incredible day.
Here are all the latest NFL. Stephen O'Brien from UK and Irish Packers podcast.
Few bits and pieces have been happening during the week. I suppose if we start off with a bit of gossip, Urban Meyer has been caught in a little bit of controversy, doing things he shouldn't have been doing, maybe with someone that wasn't his wife.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, this is the optics of this are just absolutely horrendous. Rich, we've been on the radio now for years, and most of the time, the best action that happens in the NFL is all of this dramatic stuff off the field, the stuff that happened as well. But look, basically, Urban Meyer. He was a really successful college coach. He divides an awful lot of people because he's pontificating all the time and everything has to be perfect. And he's treating his NFL players, who are grown men, some of them, like we see Matt LaFleur, for instance, he's the head coach for the Packers. He almost coaches players his age. You know, so these guys are grown men, they're millionaires, they don't take any mess. And you know that from a professional rugby setting. If you don't bring the real stuff in the locker room, then you lose the locker room, and that's just how it is. So Urban Meyer apparently has come into the NFL from college. And bearing in mind, in college, he would have been the guy, he would have been the executioner, he would have held these young kids' dreams in his hands because he cannot play them and they don't get paid and they have to call him coach and all this type of stuff. But since getting to the NFL, Reg, he can't really do that with these grown professionals. Now, what did he get himself into? So his team are 0-4. I mean, they haven't won a game all season. They have a rookie quarterback who's supposed to be a generational talent, and they still haven't won anything. So he goes off, loses the game in Cincy, but doesn't fly back with the team on the plane. And that's a problem in itself, and I'll get to that in a second, I guess. But there was a video came out of him and an unnamed woman getting very close, like just dancing or whatever. And there's a couple more videos that came out. And the optics of it are atrocious. Not to mention his wife put out a tweet that night saying, oh, Urban's out in the bar, he deserves a bit of a break. And then, you know, these videos start circulating. So whatever about the disgustingness of, like, what hits the story with his family and what they're going to recover from and everything else, he had to explain himself. But, Reg, this is another example of Urban Meyer making poor decisions. Also, he stayed in Ohio and he didn't fly back with the team. And we've had Chuck Pagano coming on the Pat McAfee show, the head coach of the Colts, for like 30-something years he's been in the NFL. And he was saying he's never seen it. No one's ever seen a case where, especially with a losing team, that the coach stays behind to blow off some steam while his team goes back on the plane. That doesn't really happen. Also, there was rumors swirling that Shad Khan, the owner of the Jags, potentially tried to get rid of him, but they couldn't, because if they did, they'd have to eat millions on his contract. But Reg, it's just another example of where, in the NFL, as a head coach, how you get yourself into these positions is bad. If your team is performing badly, that's the worst thing ever. You know, you've given some leeway a little bit. But also, he went into the locker room, Urban Meyer, and tried to play this thing down. Like, oh, I stayed in the bar too long, and all to the left, and they were just goofing around. And apparently he got laughed at in the locker room. So now there's rumors that he's lost the locker room. Instead of just owning up to it and saying, I made a mistake, it looks bad, I won't do this again, he's trying to hold his players to account. But he won't fly back with them. He's trying to treat them like college players. And now this comes out. His days seem numbered, to be honest, Reg. And from that statement from Shad Khan, he said, look, we're trying to build up respect. We're trying to, you know, rebuild this thing and get back on track. People are saying that's all lawyer speak for. If he makes one more, they can get him sort of putting the team into disrepute and they can sack him without having to pay him. Yeah. And after four games and losing all four, Reg, it's a bad place to be in.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be there, all right. Get the plane home. That's the safest answer to all of that. The Brady versus Belichick battle still going on last week. Brady won, but only just.
Only just, yeah. What a game. You know, because they did ask Bill Belichick. Look, here's how it was going. Brady and Belichick, Brady's assistant quarterback, they were saying, right, which is all nonsense. And that Belichick was the mastermind behind it all. And, you know, he knows everything. He's a godlike figure in the NFL. And then, you know, they kind of went all in, spent all their cash. And then Brady got out of town because apparently it all comes out that he wasn't respected by Belichick and all this type of stuff. Brady goes on to win the Super Bowl and Belichick falls to a, people are calling a dreadful season, Reg, but it's not like he went winless. He still won some games last year, which is kind of a miracle in itself. So now it's sort of, the dynamic is just fascinating here. The fact that Brady comes back, He's never played for anybody else but the Patriots. He goes on to beat the Patriots, meaning that he's beaten every team in the NFL now, all 32 teams, which is not really what you want to see when you're a quarterback's a Hall of Fame legend. He breaks the all-time passing record, but he only just beat Belichick. And that's what people have to remember as well, is that, look, Belichick's not washed up here. He took a quarterback in Mac Jones, a rookie, who actually sort of, you know, outscored Brady in touchdowns. He got two, Brady didn't get any. He outscored him in passing yards per attempt. And it really came down to as well that the Patriots could have won this game right at the very end. They went for a 56-yard field goal to win the game, and it just clunks off the crossbar, whatever, the post, and goes out. So they still could have won this game. And it just shows you that, you know, Belichick still has it. He brought the defense on Brady. Brady isn't infallible now, and the Bucs are kind of faltering a little bit. But as Belichick says, like, they were going on like, oh, how are you gonna match up to Brady? And he says, look, you know, we went against him every day in practice when he was on the team. It was almost as if we don't know who he is. But it's interesting. It goes to show, like, it gave a bit of respect back to Belichick, in my opinion, because everyone expected Brady to march in, to lay waste to Bill Belichick, and to go on. But the fact that Belichick nearly bet him shows that he has something going with Mac Jones, is that there's some hope there in New England.
Thanks for listening to Dublin Stock and Sport on Sunshine 106.8 from myself, Ken, and Reggie. Have a good weekend.